Are in the Kitzer Ben Hagos Haros Isser Heter. So again, at the very end of Reish Mem Beis, or right before Reish Mem Gimel. So the Shach gives his Kolei Hapsak, as it's known, and we've been going through the Kitzer of the Kolei Hapsak. Last week we talked about what Shas Hadchak and Hefsin Ruber are, I guess actually 2 weeks ago. How does one qualify for that, and what exceptions does one get? If it is Shas Hadchak and Hefsin Ruber, and that pretty much means you could rely on opinions that we don't generally pass like. You could rely on more Mekel opinions. However, there perhaps are some limitations to that, as pointed out in Sifdal. So what does it say here in number 4? He says, V'chol zeh shekasu. At the end of Reish Mem Beis, Reish Mem Beis. Number 4 in the smaller one, in the Kitzer edition. So he says, V'chol zeh shekasu haynu b'stam. It says all that which he's written for is generally speaking. But if you could find another heter, meaning what we've talked about so far, is if you have straight up opinions, right? And opinions line up with one another, how are we going to pass it between those opinions? But if you could figure out another reason to be lenient, either through a Gemara or through your own logic, you could do as you see. But Dayan has to rely on what he sees. And if he is actually fit, if he is actually at the level, that he is able to make these kind of decisions. So if you do find in Shas and Poskim, things that seem to violate these rules, we come across a tshuva that seems to violate against the rules here. Well, it must be because that Posek saw some reason why it would be necessary to violate these specific rules. That is what the Shach says. And it's a little hard to figure out. Okay, so how do you work that out? So here in the Pesachim Tshuvas, he says, yeah, it's very hard to figure out what it means. So when you're going to try to find some kind of what we say tzad heter, so you're going to have to, you have to think about it, you have to know your stuff in order to be able to do so. But let me give you a couple of rules to follow. And here he comes up with one rule here in the Pesachim Tshuvos, which is a little controversial. He says, but there are Rishonim that say, he says, what about, can you rely on opinions that don't make it into Shulchan Aruch? There you go. That's a machlokas. Can you figure out? Can let's say you know that there is another shita out there and doesn't make it into Shulchan Aruch. Now he seems to be saying, even if it's in the Beis Yosef and doesn't make it into Shulchan Aruch, so he quotes that there are poskim that say, yeah, if it doesn't make the Shulchan Aruch, it's out. That means that the Shulchan Aruch is passing against it, and therefore you're not able to then use it as part of your decision making process. The Shulchan Aruch or the Ramah, and you're not allowed to include it because the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, they were the ones who, he says it here, Shulchan Aruch and Ramah, Shmo Zichronim Acher Hadeles, Ein Lachish Lahem. That's like after the door closed, so to speak. They closed the door on all the other opinions. However, no, you could rely even those opinions that don't make it into Shulchan Aruch. And some say that only be in particular situations. Now he does quote here in the footnotes an interesting Mishavura, a famous Mishavura that we actually learned together. That in the beginning of Shin Yud Ches in Or Chaim, so there it discusses. That's the prohibitions of Bishul, and there it mentions the first Shin Yud Ches Sif Aleph in the Shulchan Aruch discusses if you went ahead and cooked something, so is it usur, what is the status of it over the course of Shabbos? If you cook something on purpose, or you cooked something by accident, and in general with malachos. So what's the story there? So there is a knas that is imposed upon, and depending on whether it's for you or for someone else, and on purpose, or whether it's by accident, there's a three-way machlokas going on over there. But the Mishnah Berurah comments, it quotes from the Prima Gadim, Shechol davar she'yesh bo machlokas haposkim imhu iser, mutter lihenos midavar that anything that has a machlokas haposkim, if it is usur or mutter, so one is permitted to benefit from it on Shabbos. That is the isur hana does not apply if there is any machlokas. And what does the Mishnah Berurah not make any comment about? The Mishnah Berurah does not say as long as that lenient position is found in Shulchan Aruch. The Mishnah does not make that does not make that comment. So this line here, I think, was the subject of our discussion before I got the job, when Joel and someone else, David Abraham, I guess, called me up and said, "What was that thing that you meant that if you go to someone's house on Shabbos, very little could go wrong? Like, what do you mean by that?" So this is what I meant by that: that people are, if I go to somebody's house for Shabbos and they offer me tea, so am I going to violate maybe they don't know how to make tea appropriately. So it's pretty hard to make tea in a prohibited way according to everybody, right? That would be a problem. That's hard, very hard, even if you pour directly onto a tea bag. So there are Rishonim that say, that's okay. That's okay with the course of Shabbos. It's quoted in Tosfos. Now that position is not quoted in Shulchan Aruch, but it's still out there. It is a viable shita within the Rishonim. So if somebody else violates it, that does not impose a knas upon that food, which they violated it with. Same thing with a lot of the halachos of heating things up on Shabbos. Right? It's very difficult to violate chazara according to everybody on Shabbos. Right? It's not going to be an easy thing to be able to accomplish. So generally speaking, you're not going to, it's going to be very difficult to say, you can't eat in someone else's house because they don't know Hilchus Shabbos very well. Right? It's very difficult that food would then be prohibited, even according to you, based on that line in the Mishnah Berurah. And the Mishnah Berurah, of course, does not make any distinctions about whether it made it into Shulchan Aruch or whether it didn't. That's point one that he mentions here. You're looking at me like
this is liberating.
Okay. Halacha number two, he points out here in the Pesachim Mitzvos, is that what about Ashkenazim that paskin like the Ramah and the Shulchan Aruch paskins Lekula? Does the Shulchan Aruch, does the Mechaber's Shita count as anything for Ashkenazim? That is the question that he raised here. I mean, does that count as a position? So one thing he says right off the bat is, if the question is on a Durabanan issue, and you say, well, I want to rely on the Mechaber against the Ramah, he says that doesn't work. Because if the Ramah is being Machmar on a Durabanan issue against the Mechaber, that means that he meant it, right? That means that's not going to work. The Ramah meant it and paskin like that for Ashkenazim. The question that remains is, can you rely on him can that count as a shita lekula? Can the Mechaber count as one of the shitas that would count as a leniency that you might be able to rely on? So he does quote here from the Aruch HaShulchan that says, yes, the Aruch HaShulchan says, I don't see why not. Why just because the Ramah argued on him directly?
Yeah, it's not like rice from Pesach, you're like, okay.
yeah, I mean, that's not a great example because that's going to be b'di'evid no matter what. Mm-hmm. But maybe you would say, it's like a kula in Kashrus, where the Ramah is machmir on not bar not, and the Mechaber is not. Not. Right? So then could you count the Mechaber as like a Shita Lekula? So it says not right off the bat. I mean, the Mechaber, the Ramah, and therefore, I'm going to rely on the Mechaber, not kasher it. So I think what he's saying is, no, you can't, because you're an Ashkenazi Jew, and the Ramah Paskin, it's Usser. But if you could put the Mechaber, if you could have some other reasons why you would be Mekel, the Mechaber counts as like something you could put. You could write a shoe like, well, I'm not sure if it was so hot, and there might have been soap that was put in, and the Mechaber paskins lahakel anyways, right? You could put it on the list of things that you would want to be Mekel on, but not be Mekel outright like the Mechaber against the Ramah. That's something that he adds in here, and some other rules as well. Dashim nim suppose. Okay, fine. So that's enough with regards to number four.
The big questions do not always follow the Shulchan Aruch. The Vilna Gaon, for example.
Right. Okay. So the Vilna Gaon just thought the Shulchan Aruch, he thought it was wrong. Right.
Yeah, he goes against him.
Yeah, but I don't think that's. That's because he was outside. Yeah, I don't think we could say that, especially because the Ramah disagreed with. I mean, the Shulchan Aruch himself might have held that way. But the Ramah probably didn't, which is why the Ramah sort of ended the dream of Rabbi Yosef Karo. Rabbi Yosef Karo's dream was, we're going to have one set halacha that all of Jews are going to follow. And the Ramah said, yeah, that's fine, let me just add in the things that Ashkenazim do differently. Right? That's pretty much how the Shulchan Aruch is set up. So once that happened, it's very hard to say this idea that, the Mechaber closed the door on everything and everyone else.
Yeah,
right? I don't know, not really.
I think I've heard of Moshe sometimes will say something against the Shulchan Aruch, because
Yes, Rav Moshe would.
If you learn the Gemara and you understand it, you...
Yes, right, right, right. I don't think that's it. I think the Rambam also tried making that claim about his own Sefer, and it wasn't accepted, right? Yeah. Right. The Ravid said, yeah, that's great, except let me show in the few times. Let me just add in a couple of times where I think you're wrong. And that sort of ended the idea that we're going to have one Psak. It does apply to the Gemara, right? The Gemara, we do consider a canonized Sefer. But from then and on, we don't do it. I saw somebody make a comment about not disagreeing with Shitas of the Gionim, which is a little hard to understand because we don't generally, I'm not sure.
Well, you can't always figure out what the Psak is.
That. Right, okay, but then there's a Safi coming out of the Gemara, right? But when there's a clear, sheet in the Gemara, so then we would pass them like that. Okay. So then, hey, gets into the language of the Shulchan Aruch here, famous issue here when it comes to so just timsu bekamakum to diver mechab bevarav ushar achulim shemivim betchilas far achas bestam veachar kach yish mi shematir. Right, what happens when the Shulchan Aruch says a position? Right, this is the halacha, and there are those that permit it. So what is that? Oh yish mi or there are those that aser it. Oh yish matirin. Oh yish asurim. Oh yish mi shecholik. Oh yish cholkim hu. Right? Why is that? Bifnei shenira lehem ikar kasvar shekasu bistam vasvar acharis hi tefila beinichem. That's because what he really holds is what's known as the stam. When he Shulchan Aruch will say straight, this is the din, and some disagree. So how is he paskening? So the Shach here is commenting, and probably more famously than this is the Sefer Yad Malachi, which goes through these column of the Shulchan Aruch. So he's paskening like this, like that. But he wants you to be aware that there's that other opinion. So that other opinion is available in the canon for use. I mean, what's he saying? When it would be for use? For these Shasar Chak, or it's Shavuos, or Hefsan Meruba, those kinds of things. So it would be able to be used as use. V'al kein tzarech iyun. Did I skip a line? So therefore you need to understand why is it tafel? Is it because kloli hapsak make it the other opinion? Or v'al hadrachim shamarnu v'im hudavar durabanan yesh lismach al tefila hati b'shasokak. Well, if that's the case, so then you can rely on those lenient opinions when it's shasokak. Now, if it is the lesser opinion, because it was established as the lesser one against the bigger one, so we're not going to make you go back if you... I'm not sure what it means, go back. We wouldn't... I'm not sure what that line is getting at. Okay. Oh, sorry. Gadol, lo mahadrinan uvda im asa lahachmer b'isad rabbanan. We wouldn't... I don't know why I say if you did lahachmer and isad rabbanan. We wouldn't make you go and do the chamer position isad rabbanan. That's what it is. That if you then did the more makil position, we're not going to be machmir and say, oh, go back and do the machmir position by a durabanan. V'imu isad Torah, but if it's a doraisa, ein lahorus kesfara hatfela, lo lahachmer v'lo lahakil. And if it is an Isser Doraisa, so we don't paskin like the lesser position, neither Lahachmer nor Lahakel, afil b'shasar chak, v'yishu bal nefesh Lahachmer l'asav b'Isser Torah. But a bal nefesh has the right to be Machmer for himself if there's a din Doraisa involved. So what's he talking about here? So you saw, the yesh mis to something, those kinds of lines in Shulchan Aruch, that those aren't always l'kula, those are often l'chumra. So what happens if you have it l'chumra or l'kula, if you have it that direction? It says when it comes to a durabanan, so the durabanan, you don't have to go back, you could rely on whichever one you did, whichever one you did. That, you're not going to have to change your position. But if it's a dindo raisa, so the dindo raisa, you would have to go like the more macher position of the two. And if the v'yeshmi, whatever, is a chumra position, he's telling you that because a bal nefesh, that is a reasonable chumra, right? That is an appropriate chumra. When you have a din d'oraisa and you want to paskin, and there's a position out there that is more chumra, so even though Shulchan Aruch is not paskining like that position, one has the, so to speak, right to be machmir. That would be an appropriate chumrah to observe to be machmir in that way, which is why he would be including it as the v'yishmi, etc. So this is.
So when do you have the choice though for Issur D'Oraisa? Something that's.
He's saying an Issur D'Oraisa, if it's an Issur D'Oraisa and he paskins Lakula, but V'yishmisha Hachmir Alzeh, right? So a reasonable Chumra would be to paskin like the V'yishmisha that are Machmir on it. That's a appropriate Chumra to use. So that is Hey. So he's giving the main rule within the Shulchan Aruch, and that is when it's a simple position and a seems like a more lenient, or not a lenient, a more like a secondary position. That means he's passing likely what's known as the Stam, as opposed to a going against the Yesh.
The converse case, the Shulchan Aruch passes the Chumra, and he says the Yesh Materium. And it's a derisa, then you shouldn't follow it. That's what I'm gathering.
What?
The Shulchan Aruch says this is the Havacha.
Right.
V'yesh Matirim.
Right.
And it's a derisa thing, then you shouldn't.
Correct. Matir. Correct. Right. Now, why is he saying V'yesh Matirim in that case? That's the question. I think that there would be. I think he would be saying that if you could then tie that in with another position. I mean, I think if you would say you would go back and do the derisa, but if there's some other mitigating factor, so then it might be. Usable. There is a it was in my notes from the previous section. Can you include in the machaber? I sort of went through it twice. That's why I have two different sections here. But can you include the machaber with the sheet of the Ramah? I mean, if you're an Ashkenazi Jew, can you include the machaber? So there actually is a prima gadim that makes a distinction between when the Ramah says v'chein ikker. Versus v'chein noagin, right? That the Ramah sometimes will say a thing is, and that is the psak. Well, if that's the psak, that means that he's paskening against the mechaber. He's taking on the mechaber. But sometimes he says v'chein noagin, and that is our minhag. So that's our minhag. That doesn't mean necessarily that he's saying the other side is wrong. He's just saying that that's our minhag, and therefore you have more of a right to include the mechaber. Okay, that was from the previous sif. But there is, we did these two reasons for the yesh, why we would say v'yesh omrim. Good so far. So I wanted to just take a moment, actually, and point out one of the most difficult yesh omrims in Shulchan Aruch that we rely on every week. A subject close to certainly mine and Bob's heart, and that is the issue of eruv. So what is the leniency that is used when it comes to a community eruv, where we have wires that go all over the place? That is, it's not a wall, rather it's wires. So what is the assumption that is used in order to permit wires? So there is a concept that the Gemara says that asu rabim muvatli mechitzas. That if a wire is crossing a rishus rabim, a public space, so then the rabim will come along and will knock down the mechitza, so to speak. Will nullify the wall. So that is the problem with putting wires over what's known as a rishus rabim. That's the halacha. A wire won't work over Rishus HaRabim. So, well, how does that work? Isn't this whole area Rishus HaRabim? So the answer that we assume is that no, it's not Rishus HaRabim D'Oraisa, it's only Rishus HaRabim D'Rabbanan. That's a category that is known in the Gemara as a Carmelis, right? That is, so, okay. So the problem is, okay, why? Why is it not a Rishus HaRabim, and why is it only a Carmelis? What is the issue there? So the Shulchan Aruch figures out, okay, how does one divide between a Rishus HaRabim and a Carmelis? So Shulchan Aruch in Shin Mem Hei, Sif Zayin, this is volume 4, which is probably the least used volume of Mishnah Berurah by far, but he adds in Ezer Rishus HaRabim, Rechovus V'Shvakim HaRachavim Tesnayin Amma Ve'ina Mekurim Ve'in Lehem Choma. That if you have streets, that are more than 16 amos wide, and don't have walls, that aren't surrounded on each side. And even if they have a wall on each side, if it goes straight from one end of the city to the other side of the city, you don't close the doors at night, so then it's considered Rishus HaRabim. So if it is a 16 amos wide street, that goes from one end of the city to the other end of the city, or is not really surrounded by walls. So we're going to call that a Rishus HaRabim D'Oraisa. So what is an example of a street that is more than 16 amos wide? So we immediately might think about City Avenue, but we also think about Menorah Road and Haverford, and probably Lloyd Lane is probably more than 16 amos wide. So That sounds like it should be all of these should be Rishus Aram Doraisa, which would therefore
from one end to the other.
What?
And you say they have to go
no, that's if it's a wall, if it's walled on each side, then if it goes from one end to the other street, it's also going to be a problem.
It's not walled,
right. So it comes along, the Shulchan Aruch, and says, V'yesh omrim, shekol she'in shishim ribo ovrimbo, that if there are not 600,000 cars that, or not cars, people that are going, b'chol yom, ein rishus harabim. So then it is not going to qualify as rishus harabim. So that is the famous position of Rashi and Tosos. That is, and perhaps the sheet of the rush as well. Some say that if there aren't 600,000 people, it's not going to be considered Rishus HaRabim. So no streets here, probably not even 76, have 600,000 people going over it on a daily basis. So that, in effect, if one assumes like that, that in effect would say that all of our that there's no Rishus HaRabim D'oraisa anymore. That just doesn't exist anywhere in the world. Which our poskim that say. Our poskim that say that Rishus HaRabim D'oraisa existed in the Midbar, where you had all the camp, all the Jews would converge on the Machane Levi'ah, which is perhaps where the measurements come from. And that was Rishus HaRabim D'oraisa. Or Rabbi Rakefet, one of his shirim, describes. Anybody here been to Russia? A year ago? No? But the Red Square in Moscow, right? That's where Lenin's kever is, right? And Stalin's kever is that area. So that area, like those parade grounds, which are massive, and you could get hundreds, maybe hundreds of thousands of people in there, that's the Rishus HaRabim D'oraisa. But the regular streets that exist, that we're used to, are not considered Rishus HaRabim D'oraisa.
Probably the turnpike.
For this reason. The turnpike. Probably. Okay, yeah, we'll take the turnpike. Okay, fine. So that's great. The only problem is that that's only a Yesh Omrim.
And it's only in Roma, right?
No, it's in the Lechaver. Lechaver quotes it.
Lechaver
quotes it. But it is a Yesh Omrim, right? It's only a Yesh Omrim. So according to the rules that we just laid out, right, we should be passing like the Stam against the Yesh Omrim. And that is the basis for the for the Mishnah Berurah and the Beir Halacha saying that all Yerei Shemayim should not rely on these city Eruvs because they seem to be following a minority opinion against the majority opinion, and they're following a Yesh against the Stam, right? So that's and that's his recommendation. Now, then Mishnah Berurah does make comments on the rest of the volume here, which has to do with Eruvin, but that is the problem. So it's based on this also, the Rav Adi Yosef and Yabia Omer. That's why he also said that one shouldn't rely on these Aaron, because he's a Mechabernik, and the Mechab, he would never use that term. He paskins everything like the Maran HaMechaber, right? And the obvious rule in the Shulchan Aruch is, you paskin like a Stam against the Yesh. So therefore we should aser it, and Sfardim amongst us, I believe, attempt not to rely on Irvin, unless there's a certain circumstances. So is there any reason to say that it's okay? So Rav Adi Yosef in Yabia Omer actually gives a very interesting caveat to this rule, to the rule about Stam and Yesh. And that is that what is the standard way of understanding what a Stam and a Yesh are? When you have a simple, right? What normally is going on when you have the Shulchan Aruch says A, it says, and some say B. So what is the Shulchan Aruch usually setting up when it comes to that? Is usually setting up a machlokas, right? It's usually, this is the position that I paskin like, and some say this. See, often the Rambam, right? And some say, I mean, Rambam, when he ends up paskin like the Rif and the Rush against the Rambam, so he'll quote the Rambam on the page. So, and some say the Rambam holds like this, but it ends up being a machlokas on the page of Shulchan Aruch. So in that Yabia Omer, he quotes somebody, right, I forgot to bring it with me, but he quotes somebody who points out that sometimes the Shulchan Aruch, however, is not bringing Yesh Omrim to disagree on the Stam, but rather to explain the Stam. And when would that be? When the Shulchan Aruch, when the Stam is really just a quote of the Gemara. If the Stam is a quote of the Gemara says this, and some explain the Gemara like this. He's not necessarily quoting in Machlokas. And if that's the case, you could rely on the Yesh against the Stam. That's the suggestion that that he has. So that's what's going on here. What's the Rishus HaRabim? And these are really all quotes from the Gemara. And then V'yesh Omrim, meaning the Rashi and Tosfos hold the following, and they're not necessarily disagreeing with anybody. I don't know if I should, I don't, don't remember. I don't know if they're Rishon that specifically take on Rashi and Tosos. I don't remember. But he's quoting them as a pshat in the Gemara rather than disagreeing with the first position that he brought. So that perhaps is a justification to why we would rely on the Yishomrim against the Stam. There is a further thing which I think.
And in the figure of 600,000,
what does it mean?
Much more than 600,000. Yeah. Yeah, there were, if you include wives and children,
I don't know. The whole number is an odd number. And what does it mean also? Does it mean that all the people are in the same area? I mean, the way it sounds like in Shulchan Aruch is that we're going on the street. And what does it mean on the street? It means only on that street? What about if there's, what about if you're New Jersey Turnpike and it's really four streets that are set up across? I don't know. I don't know how you get the specifics on what that number actually means.
I don't know. It's also the whole length of City Avenue, for example, the US 1.
Right. So I think it's normal. Right. Well, what does it mean? Anywhere on the street? And right. US. Right. City Avenue is US 1 from beginning to end. Right. Does it mean that answers the whole street? City Avenue is one of the big issues of the Erevores that took place before I arrived.
Right.
But I pointed out to somebody who was somewhat anti the use of City Avenue that. But just because the U.S. government decides to paint the one on the side of City Avenue doesn't necessarily mean that it halachically means that it's the same street that's going from one end to the other. And to claim that it's really mefulash, that it's really straight from one... What do you mean the whole one end of the city to the other end of the city?
There's a river there, by the way.
There's a river in the middle.
You have to get off at a number of times.
Yeah, yeah, so you have to get on, you have to get off, you go... What?
It's in Florida.
Right. So that's my... I don't really hear that argument. And certainly part of the argument is that it's straight from one end to the other. It's not. You can't close your eyes and just drive down. You crash into the wall. So that's my complaint. But all right, enough with Erevin now. All right. One other issue here to bring up. And that is... What are you doing here? Okay. Vav and Zayin. So Vav says that he marav v'hat. So he gets into this issue of how do we paskin? What is the general way of paskining when we have a machlokas? So the Torah itself gives us a way of paskining. That is achrei rav mahatos. Right? We have a disagreement within the Sanhedrin, so we paskin like the majority opinion. And that idea is assumed always that whenever there is a machlokas, we should follow the majority opinion. Now, the problem with that is okay. What makes the majority? Who decides what the majority is? And the majority of whom? The majority of people with smicha? The majority of people that like studied for smicha? The amount of people that have an opinion on the matter? And who gets to be divided by who? So in Vav he says, let's say you have a Rebbe and Talmud that both agree about something. So we're going to count them as two votes. Even if the Talmud is going because of the svara of the Rebbe, right? Right, we're still going to rely on him. That's how we're going to set up those numbers. However, im ein harav maskim midas echad el kol echad yesh lo tam bifnei atzmo. Let's say you have many opinions. You have right. There's a shaila about. Electricity on Shabbos, and many agree that it's usser, but they don't agree why it's usser, right? So what does that count? Does that count as they're all have the same opinion, or do they all have different opinions? We're not going to rely on that lekula. Even though the majority of people think that it should be permitted, if they all have different reasons why they think it's permitted, so that's not going to be, we're not going to rely on that. It sounds like both by an Issur Torah as well as by an Issur Derabanan. So what is going on? So do we rely on this majority or not? So it sounds like from the Shach, yes, it sounds like from the Shach that he's saying, yeah, that we, you know, when you want to figure something out, we line up all the shitas, one side or another. There's just a little problem in the details of figuring out who exactly gets a vote and how exactly we're going to tally the votes, things like king chads and things like that. Right? Does that count? Does that mean you're in or does that mean you're out? But there is,
you said that if they have different reasons, they can't count.
Right, if they have different reasons, they have different reasons. So we have so fine. Okay.
They can't be added up.
Right, but the Shach seems to be on the side of that's how we're going to figure out halacha. And that's how the Shach does it. If one goes through especially very long shachs and halachas that he covers, he lines up positions. He'll say, all these Rishonim say this, these Rishonim say that, and I'm going to pass like the majority. Right? And more famously, Bizman is, Rav Avad Yosef was known for that, lining up opinions and saying, all right, well, more hold this way than that way, and therefore we're going to pass in that way over this way. Is that the way to pass? And so he actually says here, "Alam haskamas rabim mehachronim shib machlokas haposkim lo shayach haklal shalacha barabim." That when it comes to machlokas haposkim, we don't say this idea of halacha karabim. But alchein be isurim doraisa yesh lahachmir afarov poskim akina. Therefore, we're going to be by isur doraisa, we're going to be machmir even when most people assume that one has the right to be mekel, subject to the rules that we've learned about earlier about who's greater and who's not greater and things like that. It says, why is that? Why do we ignore what seems to be instructions in the Torah itself? And he gives two reasons why not. He says, number one, he says, because we're just not going to be able to get an actual count. Right, that they're not arguing face to face, they're not standing in one place. It's not like it's a to use the terms in about Rove. It's not a Rove the Isa Kaman, it's a Rove the Lisa Kaman. It's not a Rove in front of us. It's a Rove that's spread out all over the place, and we don't know who's gonna count. We're gonna line up all the people that wrote Svarim. Well, okay, who says that only people that wrote Svarim had opinions on the matter? Plenty of people had opinions on the matter. It's just going to be very difficult to figure out what those numbers are going to be. And he says the second thing is this idea of Achi Rav Lahatos is only when they actually have a chance to argue with one another. That's a Din Beis Din. In a Din Beis Din, Beis Din sits and they argue with one another and they figure out and then they take a vote. But when it's something that's just out there in the world and different people take different positions on it, you're not able to really make a appropriate vote, and therefore, even though the Shach seems to be on the side of, yeah, let's figure out how we're going to work out these numbers, it seems like that's not generally the way the world works. I would add in with one significant exception, and that is when it's clear that the world holds in one particular way over another particular way. That I think we've quoted this before from Elchanan Wasserman, that when the world has sort of taken a position on a matter, so then. And it's clear that that's what the majority of Rabbanim in the world hold, especially when it's like printed as the majority of Rabbanim in the world hold. So I think that actually does have halachic status. So we gave examples of that would be like microphones on Shabbos or mechitzas in shuls. Perhaps a more modern idea, the idea of women rabbis, things like that. That there's idea might come out, and there might be a discussion back and forth for a while. Yes, no, maybe, so, you know, there's some people say this, some people say that, and etc. But once there is a clear consensus one way or another, particularly if chachamim of a particular place get together and make their position known, and it's clear that there's a majority against the minority, so that majority position, I believe, has a significant status. So Sobolovsky used to give the example of electricity on Shabbos, electric lights on Shabbos, that when it first came out, it was a bit of a question, is that there are rices, if they're abundant, etc. But after 10, 20, 30 years of it being fought out, so it became a clear consensus that turning on a incandescent light on Shabbos, incandescent light on Shabbos is an issur d'oraisa. What about other electricities? That's still being fought out a little bit. I think we generally assume that it's only an issur d'rabbanan if there's no lights and it's just electricity going on. But there are positions that it's d'oraisa, and I'm not sure that that is a full consensus that has been met. But certainly the light has been. And one could probably find other things that have come up over the last century or so where it first came out. There might have been some machlokas on the matter, and sometimes it just resolves itself as being a machlokas, right? This issue, like with the international dateline. So everybody knows what the machlokas is, and you're not really going to change anyone's mind, and it's just a machlokas that's out there, and you do your best to navigate the world of machlokas. But there are other matters that have sort of been decided, and there has been consensus that has been met, and if one person jumps in and says, no, I think differently, so I don't think that one would have the right to rely on that position. That would not have the status of being a position, that would be a status of something that was decided, and we paskin like the decider rather than the decision, rather than the one or two outliers that may be out there. All right, let's stop here.
So the Shach is saying, even though these people are all spread out, and it's not really like a rove, that you can just stack them up against each other, is that the point you were making?
He's saying, well, not the Shach.